interviewing Mr. Edwin B. Buttery about scouting in San Angelo. Ms. Buttery, I found a story the other day, I don't have it with me, where you got your tenderfoot badge in 2002.
Oh, I'll be darned.
It was in one of those weekly stories that the scribe wrote and put in the paper on Sunday morning.
I didn't even know there had ever been one.
Yes, and it's, hey, it gave a couple of guys that got their tenderfoot, doing a tenderfoot investiture, and your name was on there. You got in scouting about, what, 1927?
Same year as Lindbergh.
Flew over the Atlantic.
Yeah, it was a big year for me. I'd been waiting to get to be 12 years old, and of course then you had to be 12 years old.
Right.
And I don't remember they had any Cub Scouts.
No, that didn't come to 1935.
I know when my son came along, and he incidentally became an Eagle Scout eventually, but I think he joined the Cubs in El Paso.
What did you, they didn't have the Boy Scout Village then. Where did Troop 2 meet?
We met in the, as I remember, it was in the, some part of the old Christian church was, it had been demolished for many, many years. And what room it was, I just don't remember.
You remember some of the other people that were in the troop with you?
Well, I remember my mostly contemporaries. There was a guy who eventually became a doctor, James Benton. There was Robert Lewis Hargrave. And there was an Elliot Schutt. And
J.G. Henderson was in that troop then?
Oh, yeah. And there was a... Of course, he wasn't a contemporary. He was, he was my brother's age.
Oh. Tell me a little about what y'all did. Seemed like y'all went on an awful lot of hikes in those days.
We did. And some of us went on them in between those days. I mean, we liked it so much. Hargrave and I would take out, I believe it measured 14 miles. We would hike out to Twin Mountains. Go up to the top and then on down and across where Lake Nasworthy now is. And there was a petrified forest out there between Twin Mountains and where the dam is now.
Oh, there was.
And then we'd come on, spend the night at, there was still a river there, but it didn't amount to anything. And,
was it a 7 mile bridge or something like that?
I can't even remember the name of it. But it measured out a good 14 miles, and we were, I remember being rather intrigued by the petrified forest, which is now at the bottom of one of those lakes out there, either Twin Buttes or the other one.
I'll be there. What did y'all do on the hikes? What did y'all cook for food or take for food, do you remember?
No, not particularly. If there was a whole mess of them, of course, we had to, I can't remember where the cooking requirement came in first. Could have been in a second class badge. I just don't remember. But on up through, well, I remember having to do some cooking before I get my Eagle. We'd make beef stew and remember once was rice pudding and some kind of, I guess they call it Johnny cake made of cornmeal, and that's about it.
Hmm.
And there were a few things where we had to have eggs because every once in a while the egg would manage to survive until I got ready to use it, but ordinarily they didn't. Rice pudding was another one. I think we had to have an egg for that.
I know that they used to go hiking in the evening. In those days, they used to hike up till midnight at night. It didn't seem to be
I don't remember ever doing that, but I guess it did.
Was the North Concho River pretty much the most popular place to hike in those days?
No. It's out Twin Mountain and Lake Nasworthy area was by far the most popular for, well, we lived out in that part of town anyway. Troop 6 maybe, I don't remember for sure. They would have had to hike all the way through town to get to where we had to go. Well, that's no fun hiking through town.
No. Describe San Angelo when you became a scout. What does the town look like and where you lived and that sort of thing?
Well, I, when I became a scout, we lived on Grierson Street in Santa Rita. It had just been opened up, and there was only two houses out there. Dr. Ford, who lived on the street in front of Grierson, and there was an old farmhouse that belonged to a German plumbing family, Oberkamp, I believe, and it had just been an old farmhouse. Well,
that plumbing company still exists today.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Well, that's all there was out there, because I can remember, I lived the first few years of my life over on David Street, and back then, these old barnstorming Curtis Jennies would come through, and they landed right out to where we eventually bought in what became Santa Rita, and we've hiked out there many times to see those old World War One trainers come in.
Was that the city airport out there?
No, there wasn't any city airport. That was just a nice flat place for them to land.
What was the town like? Did they have all the streets paved? And
No, they sure didn't. In fact, my father owned from Avenue L all the way down to the Catholic Cemetery. And that's an area 2 blocks long. When I got married, he gave me the 2 lots at the corner of Avenue L and Grierson, and I still own them. But I remember as a captain in the Army, just newly married, paying on the installment plan to have Grierson, my share, and have the curbs and the paving. I had to pay for all that. So it was just a dirt street.
What was your mode of transportation in that day for a young
bicycle.
Person?
Bicycle. Bicycle. Couldn't. That was before very long. Of course, the Depression came along, and a lot of people had cars, and we did too. But it couldn't afford to drive it very often, and.
You just took a bicycle and went everywhere.
Yep, or walked.
As a young kid, what did you do for your free time or for entertainment or activities?
I don't remember ever having any free time. We owned all this property, and somebody had to take care of it. It was the boys in the family, and I remember one summer we dug. I think it was 200 tree holes for pecans and fruit trees and all that. And of course, out there, you go down about a foot, and then you'd hit a layer of
caliche
and a layer of rock. But I still got the old crowbar that we used to go down through that layer of rock to get the hole deep enough. And I don't know the. There were no municipal swimming pools, of course, and we'd hike out to Ben Ficklin, seemed like every day, to go swimming. Nobody used the place, and we were all pretty good swimmers. We had no boats or anything, but we would swim up the river, plumb out of sight of Ben Ficklin, around a bend in the river. It must have been a good mile up there. And there probably is still out there a tire on a rope where you could swing way out over the river and then they let go.
How about school? How was school in those days?
Well, I started out at Fort Concho under old Kitty Buchanan. You know, other than getting a spanking every few minutes, it seemed like. That's why she was a disciplinarian. But I had lots of spankings, and then I had another one when I got home. I never found out how they knew about it at home, but they did. But my school is not like it is now. We didn't have all these visual aids and all the stuff they use now. And we just went in there and had their desks lined up. And of course we still remember they still had the old inkwells in the desk, and the girls had long hair, and I'm sure it went on for hundreds of years to dip the girl's hair in the inkwell, the girl that sat in front of you.
You mentioned you had some other members of your family, brothers or sisters?
Well, there were five boys and one girl. My older brother, Gordon, died when he was 16, I believe.
Double pneumonia, wasn't it?
Well, it was, but it was of a form that they had absolutely no way to handle it. Now it's not fatal. It was invariably fatal then, and you only had it for 3 or 4 days and you were gone. There was nothing they could do. But it's with antibiotics now, I understand that it's very controllable.
Who are your other brothers?
My next one, I was the second, and then there was James was the next one, and he was an Eagle Scout too, and I guess he went through junior college here just like I did, and finished up the University of Texas and got a degree in pharmacy, and he was going to go ahead and go to med school and have some way of earning a living while he went to med school. Well, the World War II came along, and he became a Navy fighter pilot. And after the war, he went on back to med school, and he just retired last Christmas from medical practice.
Where was he practicing?
San Antonio.
In San Antonio. How about your other brother?
Well, the next one, in fact, he was here a couple of days ago. There was some sort of Navy program during the early stages of the war called V-12 or some darn thing, where the Navy paid most of the expenses of these kids, and when they graduated, they became naval officers. And so he went to school under that program and became a naval officer. And I don't think he probably, his highest rank was probably could have been a lieutenant senior grade, I just don't remember, but he spent an awful lot of his time ferrying ships to Russia. In fact, I guess there's no place he hasn't been, because he eventually got to be a chemical engineer, he was with a small consulting engineer firm out of Houston. In fact, he ended up, I guess, as the vice president. But all over the world he traveled. He told me the other day, he said, he spent something like 20 years off and on in England, for instance. All the North Sea, oil deposits. And then he spent so much time in Saudi Arabia, they made him an honorary citizen and gave him all this paraphernalia. But he was extremely well known over in all the Emirates and Saudi Arabia and Iraq, and I don't know whether he got into Iran or not. I hope not. Then I had my youngest brother was, he was 14, he is 14 years younger than I am, and I can't remember, I was going off to West Point when he was going to school, but he regretted it. He was too young to make World War II. So after the war was over, and when he got old enough, he enlisted in the Marine Corps. And I guess he served, I don't know how long the time it was, but he then joined the reserve just in time to get called back in for active duty in the during the Korean War. And he got up as far as the Yalu River, I guess, with the Marines. And when the Chinese came in, and I was stationed in Tokyo at the time, and I got a telephone call one day from Tachikawa Air Force Base, and says, "There's a Robert Buttery out here, and wants you to come out and see him." So I rushed out to Tachikawa, and he was on his way to Korea then. I said, "I'll see you back here in a few months." A few months later, they called back, got a brother out here who wants to see you, and he had He during this winter in Korea, when they got up to the Yalu, the temperature was way below zero, and the GIs and Marines were getting their throat cut in their sleeping bag and all that sort of thing. Well, he went all the way. He got pneumonia, I guess, out of it, and eventually ended up back in the States. And he went to Utah State, I guess, for a couple of years, taking courses that they had that nobody else did, and then he went to Texas Tech and got his bachelor degree, and then I believe in went to Colorado State and got his master's, and he was with the Forest Service, but he's retired now too. Then I had a sister who inherited the old family place on Grierson Street. She taught school in Houston for many years and married a guy from the one of the few profitable railroads in the country. It used to be the Norfolk and Western, I believe, and then it joined in with the Southern, which was another money-making railroad. And he eventually retired and they moved back here.
So they live here now?
Oh, yeah.
When you were a scout, y'all moved over to the Log Cabin Village.
Right.
What can you tell me about the Log Cabin Village?
It was an extremely barren place, I know that. There just wasn't anything there. Just old bare ground, no grass, no nothing. I don't remember who it was that donated the... Well, they're making lumber out of logs, you know, the bark portion. I don't even remember how many of those things we had down there. There's a whole mess of them. And we had, we had an assembly room in each one. And generally there was a little stage at one end of the assembly room. Then there were smaller rooms that, I guess, one for each patrol. And,
did the scoutmaster have a room?
He had no room of his own that I can remember. My first scoutmaster was Cullen Cole, and he was he's kind of a queer duck. He rode a bicycle. I don't think he even owned a car, but he also had a bicycle shop, and all the kids liked him. He was good. He was also a deacon in the church. And I can't remember how many years we had him. And I guess his successor was probably John Grammer, who was head of the boys department at Hemp Hill Wells. And as I remember, he had an invalid wife, and he wasn't able to participate in the outdoor activities as much as some of the others. And I can't remember what happened to him, whether his wife died and he left, or I just don't know. And then we had and I don't know whether this is the right sequence or not, but we had a man with a telephone company, a young man by the name of John E. Robbins, who we liked very much too, and he was able to go out with us most of the time. He just died since I moved back to San Angelo, lived up here in Brownwood. There was another one that was a Dr. Norris. He was an MD and also an ordained minister in the Christian church. And times were kind of hard then. They didn't need an extra minister in the church. He kind of pinch hit it when they needed one, but he eventually opened up a practice here, and I don't think it amounted to too much, and eventually got a job in Washington with the government in the what then was called the Pure Foods and Drugs Administration or some dirt thing. It's probably called something else now, but he did right well. In fact, I and some of my friends, when we went up to Washington, we'd stay with Dr. Norris.
Did they have anything, what can you describe as far as the swimming area or any athletic field or anything of that nature that was over there?
We did play bare ground football over in the open area of the Scout Village, but if you fell, you'd break an arm or a shoulder or collarbone or something, because it was just like rock. And we played softball, of course. It never did. Well, this was during the Depression, and nobody had any money to spend for embellishments for this place. It served its purpose.
Did it have a track, a running track around it?
No.
That you can remember?
No.
Do you remember the suspension bridge that went across the river on the Concho, and they had a swimming area there where you could go swimming?
Not right here in San Angelo, I don't. We had one at one of our Boy Scout camps, but I don't remember anymore where that was.
When you, in your cabin between y'all and Troop 1, was there a shower building or a restroom building or something? Because they didn't have restrooms in the cabin themselves.
No, they didn't. I just flat can't remember whether there were any sanitary facilities at this village or not.
Well, all
there just might not have been.
All of you met on Friday night, didn't you? I know
probably,
night
yeah.
Everybody
the school
met the
was
village.
The important thing in those days.
And do you remember having any interaction with any of the other scout troops there at the park?
Oh, we had what we called field meets all the time. Or not all the time, but I've been in a whole... an awful lot of them.
Where were they held?
Usually right there.
Out in the open spot.
Yeah. I remember this James Benton, who became the doctor, and I for many years were the number one Morse code signal team in San Angelo. I don't remember ever losing the two of us together, just working together. And we had all sorts of activities we competed in. Semaphore signaling was another one, and knot tying was another one. I did pretty well in it, but... And we might have even gotten into this building, a tower of some sort. Yeah, but wood, the bare wood you needed for that sort of thing just wasn't available around here. Later on in other places, it was no problem. But here it was.
Did you know Bryce Draper?
Oh, yes. Bryce Draper, and he was his wife, Elizabeth Fowler, I believe. She was from Llano. That was my dad's. That's where he was from, and he had known her, and I believe she was, and I can't remember whether it was the Campfire Girls or the Girl Scouts that she was head of, was it?
They had a mammy cabin there, too, down near where Troop 7 was camped on the west end of that village.
I understand they're both dead now. I don't really know. I was gone for 50 years, and I lost track of everything.
What can you tell me about Bryce Draper? What do you remember about his personality or anything about him?
Well, he was tended to be on the formal side. Everybody liked him, respected him. He was very capable, but he was not one of these jovial persons like. I'm trying to think. McMaster, I believe, was
right.
His assistant at one time, and kids were all crazy about him. We remember one summer he bought an old truck, or somebody gave it to him. He put it together out of the junkyard or something. We went on a trip down through the hill country and the Llano River. I remember wading down the Llano River for miles and miles and miles on just a solid rock bottom, just maybe this deep, with big cliffs on one side of the river, and there was a peculiar looking animal called a rock squirrel that lived in crevices and holes and everything in this rock wall. I remember another time we crossed the Llano River 7 times within 1 mile. I don't even know where this was anymore. And every time we crossed the river, the truck would have a flat tire. We spent most of our time out. I don't remember, we ended up the 4th of July in Sonora for their 4th of July parade celebration. Of course, we all put on our Indian gear and dark paint and all that sort of thing and participated in their 4th of July parade.
Were you a member of the exhibition troupe that went around to these communities and put on demonstrations in 1927 and
28? Apparently not. I did that. We all did later on, but
1930, had a group that went around.
Is that right?
To the various communities. There were about 18 of them, and they put on a nighttime demonstration and signaling and first aid, and I see there was one other that they did. Nighttime, signaling, first aid, fire building. And they put it on in the theaters in those communities. J.T. Henderson was a member of that group the first time they went around.
I don't remember that at all. So I have to assume that I wasn't.
Reese Albert did the cooking, and Harold Albert was one of the groups, one of the adult leaders that went with them. Do you remember kite contests? Did you ever participate in any of the kite contests?
Oh, boy, did I. Yeah, we had those. San Angelo eventually built a municipal airport out where, close to, I guess, Goodfella. And that's where we would go for our kite flying contest. And we'd have kite fights, and where you would put powdered glass on the leader up close to the kite, or you'd hang razor blades on the tails of the kites and see if you could cut the others down, and had altitude contests and all sorts of things.
Did you ever win anything? You remember?
Oh yeah, I did, and I believe one of the requirements was that these things had to be homemade, and mine were always made of bamboo. Well, take an old fishing pole and cut strips out of it, just big enough to act as a framework, and then you scrounge whatever kind of paper you could find to cover them with. And
those were pretty big events from reading that,
they
the paper.
Were,
they
were.
A lot
they
of
really
people
were.
Came out to see those.
I remember one year we even, and this was on an altitude contest. Somebody, and I never did know who it was, had no biplane. They took off and flew up to see which kite was actually the highest looking at from the kite level.
Neil Sanders was a leader back in those days. Do you
remember
him?
Yes, I remember him as a absolutely top-notch cabinet maker, woodworker. He was good.
He built a kite, a box kite. Yeah. Called a signaling kite. It was red and white. And do you remember seeing that kite flying?
I must have. I didn't. Don't remember that particular one. But box kites were fairly popular.
He also organized the Boy Scout Archery Club. Were you ever a member of that group?
No.
Go down to his workshop and work on stuff.
No, he was being a woodworker. I believe my older brother started built a bow under the leadership of Neil, and there's an awful lot of work involved in it. You had to be a certain type of wood. I don't remember what it was, ash or what kind of wood it was, but when they got through, it was a real work of art.
When did you get your eagle? Do you remember?
About the same year I became aware that there was two sexes in this country, one of them being girls, and I've often thought of how it was unfortunate that. And that's true of my own son. You became aware of girls about the same time you're trying to finish up on your eagle badge, and sometimes the girls want out. I can't remember. I was probably, my brother. Read about them since, but I still don't know much about them. I believe the Logan boys both belonged, and I can't even remember anymore. I think Sam Schubert was probably one of them, too.
Yeah, Ford Beware was one of them.
Yeah.
But they were different. They were a separate group from the group you ran around with.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were all older. I don't know of a single contemporary of mine that belonged or even cared about belonging. We just, we were Boy Scouts.
How big was your scout troop that you remember?
I really have no idea. I don't even remember how many patrols there were. I started out in a line patrol and I stayed there. One time my older brother was a patrol leader and eventually became a patrol leader, and then from there you went to
senior patrol leader.
Yeah, and I don't remember how far I went even, but I did go to at least the senior patrol leader level.
Did you go to any of the summer camps?
I don't remember ever missing one.
Well, 1927, did you join?
No, I don't believe I made the 27.
First one, that was Camp Pioneer out at near where Mathis Field is now.
Yeah.
They call it 7 Mile Bridge out there that crossed the river, which is now the big 4-lane bridge that goes across Lake Nazareth. Well, then you would have probably, the first one you made would have been Camp Kickapoo down in Menard, Texas.
Oh, I definitely went to it. I might have even gone to the one when I was a tenderfoot. I just can't remember the first one.
What do you remember about Camp Kickapoo down at Menard? Y'all camped on the San Saba River.
All I know, it was great sport.
What'd y'all do in summer camp?
NASA had a lot of swimming. Swimming, diving, I can't remember. I don't believe we had any canoes unless they were homemade canoes. And during the day, we had all sorts of activities we could participate in. One of the ones that I liked best was leather working, where you hand tooled various kinds of leather articles. And
do you remember a Mr. Clapp from Lubbock, CLAPP? He used to come down to the camp and bring two or three of his boys from his troop in Lubbock, and he'd teach handicraft or other things. Nature, he was.
I don't remember him. I undoubtedly had something to do with him because I tried to participate in everything. But I just the name doesn't ring a bell.
Do you remember anybody else that was in camp? Of course, Mr. Draper was there.
Well, just all the in the way of adults. I think he pretty. I think that was before Mac Masters was even here. And as far as I can remember, the troop, the scoutmasters and Bryce Draper were the only adults out there. And I do remember one year, though, it's always kind of rankled a little bit since we have this equal rights thing for women. He would choose several of us to go to the campsite early. And the whole purpose was to erect the tents for the Girl Scouts or Campfire Girls and dig latrines for them. And I always thought, damn it, why can't they get out and do their own if they're so equal?
They camped at the same time or right after y'all, usually at Camp Kickapoo, it was after y'all had camped, they went down.
Well, I don't remember at which camps they were involved, but once or twice, we were on the same river, except they were on one side of it, and we were on the other side, and there was
Camp Conley up near Carlsbad, over there,
right?
The North Concho River.
And I know the dam was, you could walk across the dam without even getting your feet wet, so there was some, but you can't call it fraternization, but co-mingling of the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, all strictly platonic, I might add. I mean, that, we didn't know about any other way of life then.
Do you remember going out to Lewis Farr?
Oh, yeah.
The first year they had camped out there. What can you tell me about that camp?
Not anything in particular. I believe that's the one that Sam Schubert's wife now owns.
Yes, Elizabeth Schubert.
Yeah. One thing and I'm not so sure you want it recorded. Lewis Farr had a son, or one of the Farrs had a son about the right age, and to be a scout. I don't know what troop he was in, anything about it, but one of our scoutmasters turned out to be a homo.
Lewis Houston.
Well, I didn't know whether anybody knew about him or not, because I mentioned him the other day with in front of some contemporaries, and we were talking about being a queer in the scouts, and I said, yeah, I know, I had some experience with him, and that's what turned me against that sort of thing, but I mentioned his name. No, that wasn't his name. Well, he's still the only one I ever heard of. But anyway, he got involved with this Farr boy, and the next day he was no longer a member of West Texas. He was summarily booted out of town.
Gilly Pfluger told me a little about it, and so did Sam Schubert. And Harold Albers. He said it was kept pretty quiet, but it really
was.
A lot of them didn't know anything about it. He was a very popular scoutmaster.
Very much so.
Everybody liked him. He enjoyed taking the kids out on campouts.
Yeah, he just had this quirk, and he just was not compatible with Boy Scouting, as far as I'm concerned.
What are some of the, as you look back upon scouting when you were in it, and I assume you were in it for several years, do you remember when you got out?
About the time I was, well, I guess I graduated from high school in 17, so you might say I was in it up until I got out of high school.
About 1932,
33,
somewhere around there.
Yeah, right.
When you look back upon scouting, what are the biggest impressions that come to your mind about it?
Well, I give the scouts and the church and my parents and Dean Chenoweth credit for making a decent human being out of me. And so I guess you would say the biggest thing in scouting, it is responsible for become a decent person, really. I don't know how else to express it. But it certainly was pointed toward making good citizens out of all the kids. And, oh, I'm sure there must have been a kid or so who smoked, but that was absolutely the extent of our moral depravity under the Boy Scouts. And I didn't, wasn't one of them. I didn't smoke cigarettes, but It just tied right in with the churches and with
Well, and if your parents were decent people, tied in with everything they tried to teach you.
Was this pretty true of most of the kids that lived in San Angelo at that time?
Absolutely. At least I think it was. I can't think of any. Well, I can think of one whose name I won't mention. Who later proved to be a thief. He was killed on D-Day. And he's the only one I know that ever got in any trouble. And he really didn't get any trouble. He didn't, because the stealing was from my father, and my father was active in the Boy Scouts too. And he never made anything.
Never even mentioned it.
You said your father was active. What did he do in Boy Scouting? Was he on the committee or? What was his name?
A.J. was his, A.J. Buttery. I know for sure that he was one of the merit badge examiners. But he was doing a lot of traveling, and I don't think he, I do remember him coming out to our scout camps from time to time, but he never spent the night or anything. I know he and my mother would bring a huge freezer of homemade ice cream out, and it held about 2.5 gallons, as I remember. And it was enough for everybody out there. They always looked forward to it.
What did your dad do?
He was a pharmacist.
Here in San Angelo?
Well, he had a whole mess of drug stores out all through the oil fields, and the depression got him. He tried to do too much too fast, and the depression came. And
what were the name of the drug stores?
Do
you remember?
Well, the one in Sonora was called the Sonora Drug Company, and the one in Ozona was called the Ozona Drug Company, and the one here in San Angelo was called like the old building is down on Chadburn Street. It's got a tile front on it, and there's two orange crosses made of orange tiles. And it was right next door. There was a Gulf filling station on one side and Johnson Furniture Store on the other. The old building's still there. But I don't remember the names of them. There was one in Santa Rita, one in Ariane, and one in
Texon,
Big Lake.
Well, he had quite a
chain. He did. He was on his way to becoming a wealthy man. It's unfortunate.
He couldn't pay all his bills because he didn't have any income coming in. I guess that's what happened during
the whole time. There wasn't any money anyplace.
What did he do after that?
Well, he was. He went back to doing what he did when he first came to San Angelo, and that was a pharmacist at the Central Drug Store, which it was a pharmacy. It wasn't anything else. And they brought him in here, two doctors, I guess, on the thing. That's what he did up there. He was still a registered pharmacist the day he died. But in the meantime, he had a wholesale drug business.
If I may ask you, how old are you?
I'm 73.
73. You were born when? 15.
1915? Yeah.
What did you do with your life when you left San Angelo?
Well, I went to junior college here for 2 years under Massey scholarships. He being if you remember Robert Carr of the day on a much smaller scale, but he enabled me to get 2 years of college. Then I went off and to West Point Prep School. Try to get a competitive exam, appointment to West Point, and yet, practically, I know one kid whose average on the final exam was 98. That was not high enough to get him in. It was awful. But anyway, while I was there, I got a political appointment to West Point from old John Nat Skarner. And unfortunately, it was not until the next year. So I went back to college here for a year, just having a good time and taking things like typing and all these. And I'll never regret that either. Just all these courses I was.
Never had time to take before.
Well, I was interested in being an engineer, and I wasn't interested in anything that didn't pertain to engineering. And I wanted to go to MIT. Well, MIT is one of the more expensive schools in the world today, and it was then. And so I knew that was out of the question. So I settled for. I wanted to go to West Point, too, because it's the oldest engineering school in the United States. For many, many years, it was the only one. So that's where I finally went. If I hadn't got this appointment, I would have gone to A&M. But I served as an Army officer, got out, retired in 69 for physical disability. And I haven't earned a cent since.
Yeah, what did you do in the Army? Were you an engineer?
Well, I was a field artilleryman, and there's an awful lot of work that's engineer-allied concerned with field artillery, mostly civil engineering, where you survey. And I went through the war as a captain, most of it. And got shot down over in Germany. And
flying a plane? Or?
Yeah, a Piper Cub. Wish I had one today. God, I love those planes. Anyway, I spent a year and a half in the hospital after I was shot down. And eventually the Army sent me to University of Southern California to get a master's degree in engineering, specializing in guided missiles. So the last half of my career in the Army was as a guided missile expert. And if I can say truthfully, if I hadn't done that, I would not have ended up being retired early as a full colonel. You had to do something to distinguish yourself. At least that's what they used to tell us at West Point. There's just too many field artillery lieutenant colonels around, and that's the way they retired. They said, now, if you want to get ahead, you make a name for yourself in some offshoot of military, and of course, guided missiles, there weren't any when I was at West Point, but there sure were right after the war.
Where did you spend most of your time? Where were you stationed at?
My last 5 years was in Northern Virginia, just across the river from Washington. And then I was in Florida for 3 years with liaison officer with the Martin Company, who manufactured what I consider to be the most successful missile system that's ever been developed, and that's Pershing. And I was in on the ground floor of that. It started out with the artillery board, which we were located at Fort Bliss, missile division was, because of the proximity of White Sands. That's where we conceived the program in the first place, and we came up with all we wanted this thing to do, and then the Artemis Corps took over from there and eventually came up with a real good system. And I was responsible for the user input into the system. In other words, the Artemis Corps came up with some queer ideas sometimes about about how to do things. We knew how we wanted to do them, and we ended up with a real fine system.
What are you doing now? You're retired.
Trying to do, find time to do all the things I used to do without even thinking about it, like reading, recording music, and no social life, no wife. But I used to have time for all of those things and working for a living. I don't know. It's something I can't understand. I have not earned a penny working since I retired. I've had income, actually, but it's from investments, and plus the fact that with a 90% disability I get, which is mostly tax-free, I do pretty well.
I notice you have a very extensive library of these recordings of...
Anything you want to mention, I've got a recording of it, not only here, but I got a whole closet full of them in there that I had made for my wife, who taught the first grade for 25 years. And we were real innovative, she and I together were, in the uses of reel-to-reel tapes in education. Of course, it's real common now. But.
Are these, I notice you've got some reel-to-reel there, but you also have a lot of cassette tapes.
I got 900 and something cassettes and 600 and something reel to reel.
All music?
Oh, no, no. Say not. All these educational tapes I made, there were some music involved of foreign countries and the dances of various countries. And phonics lessons, just almost anything you can think of that could be put on tape for educational purposes, I did that.
Was this your hobby?
Well, it's hard to say whether it was a... No, it wasn't really. It's because my wife decided she wanted to be a school teacher, and we dreamed up all these things, and it just kept me busy. I would much rather have been out on the golf course or building something.
You have a family.
I got one son, who's an Eagle Scout, and he runs the farm up near north of Brownwood, Pecan Farm.
I appreciate you sharing this information with me about scouting. It's been real interesting. You've shed some new light on some things. Scouting, I guess, for kids in those days was the main thing they did, wasn't it?
Yeah, I've talked to Strat Crawley on the general subject, and it's we both, and J.T. Anderson, we all lament the fact that scouting is just not what it used to be. And it's not because of TV, for one thing, and because of the universal complaint among teenagers, well, haven't got anything to do. Well, I got a good answer for that. But get out and get some blisters on your hands.
Times have changed. We're in a different environment now, I guess, than we...
I still say that Boy Scouting is, there's a place for it. It has changed, yes. And I can't say I could ever do anybody any harm, and well, it makes self-reliant men out of boys, I know that. Where there's very few other things that can do that. I don't remember when old Robert Baden Powell, it was in the somewhere around 1920, wasn't it? I'd have to look it up.
1908.
Is that right?
1906, actually, and then scouting started in the United States in 1910.
Yeah.
Were you born here in San Angelo?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember there being scouting when you were a younger kid before you became a scout?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was my ambition in life, to get to be 12 years old so I could become a Boy Scout. It was the thing.
Who were some of your other contemporaries that you remember?
was Robert Louis Hargrave and James Benton, both of whom I have already mentioned. And
isn't Robert Hargrave still alive?
Oh yeah, he's right now. He's visiting his son in Hawaii for Christmas.
Well, he lives here in San Angelo.
He lives out in Bentwood, I guess. He was also an engineer, and his father was one of the founders of the local telephone company, along with Armistead Russ's father. And I guess when his mother died, she had three boys. She left each one of them a ranch, so he's got a ranch out at Sonora that he's got leased to one of the hemp hills. And he just pretty much does what he wants to. He was a mechanical engineer in Valiso for many, many years. James Benton became a doctor. There's on some of the other troops the profession that seems to be missing from people that I grew up with is law. I can't think of a single friend of mine who became a lawyer. My younger brother, who's 2 years younger, he had all kinds of friends who were lawyers. And then there was two Logan boys, they were both older, they were both lawyers. And Charles Harris I see every Sunday, but I never did ask him what his profession was. He's mostly all crippled up now, I know that. He was quite a good football player.
How about your brother Gordon? What do you remember about him as a scout? He must have been very popular from what I've read in the articles.
I had a... You generally look up to your older brother. Well, I did. Especially his intelligence. I don't know whether they measured IQ then or not. But if they did, his would have been about 200, I'd say.
Very smart, intelligent.
Extremely so. Chester Kenley, who was principal of the high school, and he died about a year ago, told my mother one day that as long as he was principal of the high school, and even up until that very day after he had retired, that nobody had ever had the grade point average that Gordon did. Now, of course, they have introduced these time off for good behavior. I mean, you come out with a score of over 100, which is absurd. That's not the reason you go to school. But his actual grade point average was just about 100.
Mm. That was good. He was senior patrol leader and patrol leader, and he received the the Chase Holland Award for the troop. And I have found several articles with his name in it as I've gone through this.
Well, he tried out for two expeditions. One of them was Byrd's expedition to the South Pole. And he was one of the runner-ups in that. And of course, you remember his name now, became a doctor, a PhD. Paul Seidel was the winner. And there was another expedition conducted by a man and his wife. One of them was named OSA, O-S-A, the first name, the last name was Johnson, and they specialized in safaris in Africa, all sorts of, not killing safaris, I mean, they were naturalist types. And I don't remember how he ended up in that one. I don't think he was a runner-up, but then he wanted to be a doctor.
I appreciate you sharing that with me, because I've seen his name so much in the literature. I wanted to know a little more about the person.
Well, that was the only time that I'm aware of when he died the entire Scout organization in San Angelo marched from the First Christian Church, come out to Fairmont Cemetery.
I know that was quite a tragedy to you, because if you looked up to your younger brother, older brother, you felt like you really missed something in your life.
Yep. No, I think society was a big loser. He was a genius if I ever saw one.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm going to stop the tape now.